All right, welcome to Time for Fellowship with Andrew. You heard it right, it's just me. So as much as crap as Matt's been giving me, look at me now. It's just a lone Andrew with a guest. So we're looking forward to today's episode. We have a wonderful guest, and you know, I don't have anyone else to talk to in the opening clip, so I'm just going to kick this puppy off and get us going.
Loosen up your ties and roll up your sleeves. It's time for Fellowship with Matt and Andrew. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Grand Lodge of Wisconsin or any other Grand Lodge or any appended body.
All right. Well, we have a very special guest joining us today, and we have a past master of Lake Lodge, eminent commander of Ivanhoe Commandery. He's a past high priest and a past thrice illustrious master. So, and on top of that, he is also a district representative for District 12. So basically, to sum that up, he's a past master from Lake. He's very active in the York Rite, and he's our district rep. Hi, John. Welcome to the pod.
Good morning, Brother Andrew. How are you today?
Good, good. Beautiful day to be back out here. I mean, to be in a room, nice climate-controlled room instead of outside, but, you know, it's always fun to get on the podcast, so I'm happy you accepted coming by.
I'm happy you asked.
So, we like to start off all of our guests with a similar question. What brought you to Freemasonry? Why are you sticking around? You know, how'd you get into this mess?
Spaghetti dinner. There you go. Actually, Worshipful Brother Jeremy Hilgendorf and I had been talking about joining Freemasonry for quite some time and didn't really know how to do it. You know, back then, you didn't really talk about it. Well, not too far from this right now either. But I knew a lady, Diane Bingheim, and had worked with her. And
familiar name.
A very familiar name, yes. And cut the long story very short here. We were at a Christmas party at work, and she had to get going, and she said, next year I probably won't be around because my husband's going to be the grand poobah for his group. I'm like, okay. Saw them leaving church one day, and they had a square and compasses on the back of their minivan, and
ooh,
yeah, the next day at work, I'm like, Diane, is your husband a Mason? And she's like, well, what do you think I've been talking about all this time? So she invited me to a spaghetti dinner, which happened to be the spring dinner. Now it's our soup and chili
coming up next week.
Coming up next week. And really, the rest is history. So my journey really started with a spaghetti dinner.
So, and when I was joining Freemasonry, you were the sitting master of our lodge. So when I was going through...
I am to blame, yes.
So when I was joining, you meet a lot of people, right? So I had a little notepad in my pocket that I would write people's names and something funny to try to remember them by. So I had some people that I listed as Old Luke Skywalker, our co-host Matt, I listed as Gimli, son of Gloin. His beard was down past his waist at that point in his life. And for you, I had Monopoly Man because you had a top hat when you were sitting in the east.
Yes, I did. That was my tuxedo hat when I was master. Yeah, it was a
good
top hat.
It looked good, but I was like, I won't forget if I know this is the Monopoly Man in the room. So how many years have you been a Mason?
Going on, I believe it's going to be 11 years this summer.
Oh my God. So a little over a decade. Once you joined, why did you stay?
I just really found a literal band of brotherhood that I could, you know, really enjoy the ritual. No surprise, I love ritual, going into the York Rite and stuff. But all of that really appealed to me. I thought it was going to be the history.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be the secret knowledge.
The secret wisdom.
That's right. But really, it was the brotherhood and the ritual that really kept me going.
Well, you were in fraternity in college as well, right? Like a farmer's fraternity or agriculture.
We prefer the word term agriculture, yes.
So what kind of crossovers did you see? Did you join that college fraternity with similar reasons to why you joined this adult fraternity, which is Freemasonry?
So yeah, Madison, I went to UW-Madison, and with 40,000 kids running around, you needed to find something that you could, you know, make your world smaller. And the fraternity was definitely what I did. Kind of was invited by a friend of a friend to a party there and really kind of hit it off with some of the guys. And it was a smaller fraternity, but a lot of guys with like-minded majors and whatnot. So like-minded people, very similar to Freemasonry. And that was really the gist of it. And again, I liked the fellowship. So, you know, I went like the house fellow side of things where you're there to help temper people within the house, you know, end fights, that sort of thing.
Keep people within due bounds to still have a good time.
That's right. It's a little different in that regards, yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I've noticed that there's a lot of brothers that I meet that come from, I would say, similar types of backgrounds. So you'll have the veterans who they have like a brotherhood that they had within their service. And so then when they're returning to the civilian world, they sometimes like to join Freemasonry to have a sense of brotherhood. I've seen a lot of people who were in college fraternities who are like, well, we kind of know the song and dance because a lot of college fraternities were based off of the Masonic structure at their start. So they kind of like, I kind of get what's going on. I know how we kind of run this stuff. So they like it. And then it is first responders or also a group of people who, for similar reasons, they like that band. And yeah, and then it's people from DMLA and the youth groups. And then there's people like me who just show up for no reason. So
you're looking for something. You're thirsting for knowledge, maybe.
For me, similar to you, it was because I liked the history and the historical figures were ones that I looked up to. And I always was like, you know, I wanted to find a way to interact with the past in a more intimate way. And Freemasonry kind of does bridge the past and the present in its own little unique system where you can sit there. And I remember when I was, getting ready for initiation and I was waiting, I was sitting there. My brain was like Teddy Roosevelt. The Marquis de Lafayette, Himan Bolivar, like all these names were coming, George Washington, Ben Franklin. And I was sitting there being like, they probably sat in a similar room waiting to join in their own time. And I was like, there's a cool connection that you can feel to an intimate connection to people who have, even if you're reading their biography, you feel a connection to them, even though they're hundreds of years deceased.
They're 20 years old at one time, sitting in the same place you were, waiting to experience the same thing.
And that's one of, I think, one of the cooler things about Freemasonry is like, there's so many avenues you can find interest in. And I think that, you know, we named our podcast Time for Fellowship because we think fellowship is very important. Not the most important, but I would say it might be in the top two because it's almost like out of fellowship, the other things kind of birth from. It's like, since you guys are close and you guys have good communication, you're all on the same page, you're able to do ABC 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. You're able to study ABC 1, 2, 3. You're able to find like-minded people. And I think that is, I mean, it's like we say the mystic tie and stuff like that. There is something that when people ask me and they're like, you know, what is it? I go, it's more of a feeling. I don't know what it is. You know it when you know it. And only Masons can really understand that.
Definitely. And you know, you talk about like-minded people, and it's not that we think the same. I can walk in the store, and no matter how terrible my day was, or maybe how wonderful it was, I leave it behind. It's like you take off that coat of the outside world, and you kind of expose yourself to these guys. And it's a wonderful feeling to be able to just talk out of your heart and, you know, being accepted that way.
And you have people who are so uniquely different. Like, if you think about traditional friendships, it's either people that you're in school with. So your forced proximity is a big one. Who are you forced in proximity with? It's usually people from your hometowns. You guys have similar opinions. You have similar ideologies. You have a similar worldview. And so it's you know, traditional friendships are amazing and they're usually lifelong. But Masonry gives you a very diverse like amount of friends from various walks of lives, various worlds, various opinions. And I think that if you brought some people in this room and explained what everyone was, what their political and religious affiliations were, what their, you know, worldviews were, you would be in shock that they're sitting together and laughing and having a good time. And there, I think there's something magical about that.
Definitely. When you talk about what Masons are all about is really, they want to make themselves a better person is kind of deep down why they are here, you know, and I guess that's the similarity. We all want to grow internally. And we really feed off of each other and learn from each other. And I guess that's part of growing. It's a human.
Yep. And it helps dispel a lot of bigotry as well, because it's easy to hate various groups of people when you've never had to sit down and talk with one. And then when you sit down and talk with someone that you would traditionally maybe be like, I don't know, I don't get along with these people for whatever superficial reason you can contrive in your head. When you meet people, you find out that a lot of people are, you know, even if you might disagree with some of their opinions, they're trying to be good people. And in their own way, they are being good people. And it dispels a lot of these myths that society ingrains in people or their upbringing and various things ingrains, because the biggest way to dispel illusion is through exposure to the illusion itself and going, oh, you know what? I was I was wrong. Like, I don't know what I was talking about.
Man fears what it doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm. So, hard question. Let's lob a hard one at you.
Oh.
Let's get you in the hot seat. What symbol in masonry personally resonates with you the most?
Well, there's one. The point inside of a circle.
Okay, the circumpunct.
I am a big, big believer in, you know, keeping yourselves within due bounds. And you worry a lot about things that are happening around you, but you can't do anything about it. So why should you worry about it? And that's one of a big mantra for me is, you know what? I will worry about what I can control. What I can't, it's outside my need to worry about.
What's that? That reminds me of the prayer that the Alcoholics Anonymous had selected. That's kind of a strong one. It's like, let me know the things I can control and know the things I cannot control and be able to see the difference. That's paraphrasing. Someone can correct me in the comments or whatever on what the exact one is. It's interesting because I've actually never thought about the circumpunct representing that style of circumspection. I've always thought, keep yourself within the extremes. You know, try to put a circle and say that I will not stray too far. But that's an interesting hidden virtue that can be found within that symbol. Is the Stoics talk about it as well. Is the surrendering to what you do not have control of. Mm-hmm. Like an example would be if you're in traffic and you're mad, your anger's not actually making any difference.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just sitting there burning yourself with a coal for no reason. And there's something significantly powerful about that practice in the ability to let go of what's not in your control. And I've found with my wife, sometimes she wants to get like really overworked about something that there's nothing we can do. We just got to kind of, you know, just say, well, mm-hmm. I can either do A, I can do B. Are those going to work? No. Well, then C is me. I'm going to move on from it because there's nothing we can do.
Yeah, that's a good thing about marriage, right? You have a second opinion that can kind of bring it into line.
Yeah, I'd be like, why are you never worried about stuff? And you're like, well, it's not my control. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
Me being all scared is not going to help.
But there's a lot of symbols in masonry. You know, we meet on the level. And that's a powerful saying right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about people from different walks of life. But when they're in that room, they're on the level. They're, you know, one and the same. We're all equals. So that's a wonderful thing.
I've always thought it's interesting that the level is described as the level of time, right? And so then we as Masons have continuously took it one step further and saying that we all are meeting on a same plane. But when you think about it philosophically, we're basically saying we're all living right now and we're all going to die. So as much as you want to say like, no, I'm higher up than you, it's like, no, we're all bound by the same mortal life. And so whether you have all these accolades and I don't, I will meet you in the ground. And, you know, so don't think you're so much better than everyone else because we're all humans stuck in the same circumstance.
Yes. The cold crypt is the great equalizer.
That is always one thing I've always liked about masonry, because in modern society, I think maybe more than ever, there's been a push away and a creation of more fear around death. And so in masonry, we have memento mori symbolism in our ritual saying, remember, you too shall die. So what are you basically going to do while you're living? Like, and it's a good reminder. And I think in the past, death was such a regular experience in life because disease, various things, like you would know more people who died. It would be a more present thing that the act of memento mori was kind of forced upon you because you're like, it's just happening, dude. Like there's an army marching through my territory. Like people are dying. Like it's just a regularity of life. But in the modern era where thankfully modern medicine, a fairly stable world of all things considered, mm-hmm. Historically speaking, and all that stuff have made death seem so far away to some. And I think that going back to the remembering that sets an urgency on your life saying, don't squander time because you're running out of time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a powerful motivator.
Yep. Squander not time, for it is the stuff that life is made of.
Ooh. Who said that?
I think it's Benjamin Franklin.
Brother Benjamin.
John Falk.
Brother John Falk. Said it now. So how do you think that masonry has affected your personal life from before you joined till after you joined? What's the biggest way you think it's impacted you?
It's given me a lot of things to do after work on.
We all know that problem.
Really, it's given me an outlet to give back. We, you know, that was actually one of the other things too. Was I moved to Milwaukee back in '95. I never really joined anything. Didn't really do much outside of work. Most of my free time was traveling somewhere to meet a friend or do something with them. And I hadn't really done anything in the Milwaukee area. So this really gave me an outlet to give back, at least in my community side of things. And so that was one big thing that's changed a lot in my life. So, and then meeting people outside of work in the area. I never would have met you probably, even though you and I live
like 6 blocks away.
Maybe not even, like a
6 minute walk. Yep. It does like really expand your world in the community you're in too, for sure. I saw 2 days ago, I was driving on the highway and I saw a square and compass. So being a safe and normal driver, I zoomed up to see who it was. And it was a brother from Damascus. And I go, oh, I know him. And I tried to wave, but I'm like, I'm not going to get in a car crash. I verified that, you know, and it's like, even in Milwaukee, it's actually kind of a lot of Masons. Yep. But even with it being a decent number of people, you kind of get to know a lot of them. So you almost can see them all over the place because your net is just so much larger.
Yep.
And I, like you, found that Masonry kind of gave me a call to do something else, which what that entails is a lot of new skills that you gain to participate and do Mason stuff.
Yeah.
That I don't think I ever would have developed had I not been. I mean, you're a district representative right now. 10 years ago, did you think you were going to be doing that?
No, definitely not. You know, traveling to different lodges, meeting new brothers. That actually, it's been the best part about being a district rep. And so I enjoy
forced
that a lot.
Travel.
Well, it's good travel.
Good travel. Yep.
Well, we're traveling men. That's what we like. That's what we do.
So many people, especially in our district right now, the Hayes boys started doing their traveling lodge. Our Worstful Master saw that and my co-brost and was like, we should do that too. And
made me laugh at co-brost.
And then I've been seeing too, there's like kind of, I don't even think it's necessarily through the Hayes guys or us. There's a general traveling fever that I'm noticing in the state. And I think Hayes, Lake, and stuff are a byproduct of that fever starting to pass through. And I'm seeing a lot more traveling happen, which a lot of Masonic content creators have been talking about, where they say, if you really want to learn about Masonry, there's something that travel, it's almost hidden right in our name, saying we're traveling men. And if you're a Mason and you never travel, you're not going to understand the traveling man part. And I think that's interesting that that's its own unique avenue for Masonic experience, is the experience of travel.
Look at the landmarks. You know, you obey the laws of the country in which you reside. It's built around traveling. And so it's in our bones. It's what's encouraged to do.
Well, and if the maybe historical, maybe mythological, I mean, there's a debate on it. If we did come from the free Masons who are cathedral builders, the ability to travel was one of their unique privileges.
Yes.
At the time. Like, if you think in the past, during serfdom, you had to get permission to travel. So merchants would be given that permission, but general builders would not.
Yeah.
Unless, I'm sure there's probably some caveat to that, where maybe given they could, but not as easily. They probably had to get like paperwork. You know what I mean? Some sort of approval process in play. But the cathedral builders were given more or less dispensation by their governments to say, hey, you guys can form these and then train other Masons locally so that, you know, you can have a larger workforce to move around the various countries.
Yep. And you had a lot of guidelines on what you could do, what you couldn't do, and whether you were the, you know, apprentice to the master, and what the apprentice, the master could do to the apprentice, and what their expectations were. And I don't know about having to get dispensation to travel, but maybe I just, they, you had to go to your master of the worksite and get a, probably not a writ, but a code that would allow you to be recognized wherever you're going.
You probably needed to go to the government, honestly, a lot of the time, to probably a local official of some kind to say, or it could be probably someone within the king's cabinet of sorts to be like, hey, we're going to leave and go here. But it seems, as far as we're able to understand, that the cathedral builders were given like an easier pass. Like, they'd be like, oh, you're going, all right, you finished your job here, all right, see you later. Like, so that created a diverse group of men as well, who would maybe, I'm sure there'd be some that would stay in their homes, maybe not travel too far. But if the lodge is made up of men from multiple countries, some would be like, yeah, I'll go to the next worksite. That's how I make my money. So yeah, it's an interesting lineage or folk lineage. We don't know which 100%, but it's an interesting thing we pull from in our lore.
And they probably all spoke the language of geometry, and that's how they got along, and they were able to communicate that way.
Just point at rock and be like, and hold tool to it and go, and you're like, thumbs up.
Yeah, exactly.
So being a district representative, you've been doing that for how long now? Like a little over
4 or 5 years now, I think.
4 or 5 years. So yeah, actually you're well-seasoned. Yep. Former area administrator, now district rep.
Yep.
What would you say was your biggest challenge taking on that role? And what would you say have you enjoyed the most about that role? Outside travel. We already went over that.
The biggest challenge was just you know, coordinating your calendar throughout the year. You know, you needed to visit so many lodges, you had to be at so many district things, and you kept your calendar up to date very far into the future and just being organized in that regard. I guess that wasn't too much of a change because I did that quite a bit already, but that's something that is a definite must, the planning side of things. And then filling out your reports and getting them in on time.
So, the administrative work.
The administrative work has not always been my strongest suit, but I enjoy it. I like to write down a lot of details about when I visit a lodge, details about the brotherhood, how the good times that are happening, you know, what I found interesting about that lodge. And every lodge is different. Every lodge has a personality. You've visited quite a few already. Mm-hmm. You know this. And so I always like to put that sort of information down.
I think that's actually really cool. I never know what a Grand Lodge rep is doing. I see they have a notebook sometimes, and I always assume that they're looking at, like, are they checking the boxes? Which I'm sure that's part of it, where they're like, yeah, we're getting a pulse on where the pain points are and where the strong points are. But it's interesting because that almost puts you in a position of, like, a lodge ethnographer, like, you know, where you're going to a place and being like, if someone had to ask you, what's the culture of this lodge, you could have a better understanding, like, this is kind of what it feels like and to be in here.
Yeah.
And I think that's super cool. I mean, it could be a great topic for a book pretty easily.
Yeah.
The landscape of Milwaukee masonry or something like that.
Oh, the Grand Lodge is so large over such a large area. You have to have representatives, people that are, you know, going out and getting like that pulse on each individual place.
I mean, if you're including that, those musings in your notes, I bet you're probably one of the more fun reports to read versus not just like,
I'm sure.
Yeah, ritual was a B+, their attention to detail, A, this and that. They're like, oh, I get actually hear little stories about, like, you know, what it's like here and stuff like that. It kind of brings you in as if you were standing in that lodge as you're the person there in their stead.
Yeah, like, you know, Damascus has their race they always have every fall. So my last report that I went there and I put down who won the race, you know.
What was the race?
Well, they have a little stock car.
Oh, the box car races.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's such a fun idea.
Oh, yeah.
So, I didn't even know they do that, and I stand in a building with them.
Yeah.
That's a cool idea.
So, you know, just things like that, that you wouldn't be able to get a feel for a lodge unless you're actually in the building. So things like that are important on the report.
And I think, like, things like that are actually sometimes what is important to check on with a lodge. Like, if you want to quantify what success looks like, it can be challenging. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yes, you can pick out if there's some, like, ritual struggling. And you'd be like, yep, that's something. But that's also something that's very workable. People can work on that and stuff like that. But culture is something that if it's healthy, it's there. And if it's not, it's not. And that's something that's really hard to cultivate.
Yep.
So even if you see a lodge that you're like, all right, their ritual needs work. Great. But then you go, but their culture's amazing. Then you can be like, this is a very workable lodge where you like go do a couple more practices and you guys will be stellar. Like, and I think that if you find a lodge that has good culture, that means they got good bones,
yeah,
good roots.
Yeah, and when the district rep visits, the lodge has an opportunity to bring a concern up.
That's good.
You know, that's another big part of it. You know, we're not there to solve any problems, but we're there to make sure that the problem is passed on to whoever needs to know it.
Sure. So when you're a DR, I know you visit, what else is within those responsibilities? Just for our listeners to kind of flesh out, what are the DRs? What's the day in the life of a DR? You know what I mean? Like, do you meet with the masters before and after meetings? Like, what is the standard protocol? Because we don't have to see it that much in our lodge because you're a member. So we already get that stuff kind of just because of you're like, yeah, I'm your DR and I'm a member of your lodge. Like, I'm already working with you guys just as very intimately. But when you're visiting out in anywhere in the district, what's that kind of like?
Definitely. Yeah. If it's the first time in that lodge, you want to be there early, you know, and you want to meet the master, say, hey, you know, I'm your district rep. Now, I've visited every lodge, so I'm pretty well known within most of the lodges here, I would say. And, but you want to just introduce yourself. If they're having a dinner beforehand, you want to make it sure you're there for that dinner or if it's after, you know, fellowship is really important. And especially with me, because I like to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a day when you're visiting. Obviously, there's also district events, the spring meeting, the fall meeting, any other events that might be going, schools of instruction. So there's an expectation to be available to help out if needed. And, you know, obviously you are the direct assistance to the district grandmaster. So that's a big part of your role.
So as you've traveled through the district, so you got a decent pulse on the lodges that we got rolling around these parts. And if you're like me, which I know sometimes you are, what would you think would be something that you would like to see implemented or created within District 12? Keep it small, not in universal masonry or masonry throughout the state. What are some ideas that you think about sometimes going, this would be something cool to see within a district as far as like a district level type of thing?
We do pretty well here in District 12. You look at our events. I always say this at every meeting. If you're bored in District 12, you're not doing it right. But the interlodge relations, you know, Matt here has, you know, reached out and he had a breakfast with all the masters in District 12. I think that's really birthed a lot of really of unity within the district. You know, we do an axe throwing here that's actually reaches across county lines for a lot of the attendants. Just things like that, you know, outside of the lodge, keep those things going. So Wisconsin 13, their barbecue is amazing. So I know it's going to be an off year this year, but I'm sure that's going to keep going again. So those are the kind of things that need to keep going, or at least similar things like that.
So I got an idea.
So it wasn't asking me for an idea. It was prefacing your idea.
You can do both. I've texted you about this before, and I'm going to put it back in your brain and put it into every listener who listens brain. District St. John's Day in the summer, because like, so this is an event that would be hard to do like a lodge fully organizing it, because if you're trying to get the, like, this is a district level event, imagine this. I want you to just close your eyes. Imagine this. Same time, across the state and actually legitimately across the world, bonfires are lit that night in shared brotherhood on St. John's Day in the summer. So I've been thinking and always fantasizing about a St. John's District Day that if it caught on in one district, other district, you know, deputy or district deputy grandmasters and such might start being like, oh, maybe our district should do that too. And then another fire's lit. And then the fires of Rohan answers the call. And, you know,
Gondor answers.
Yeah, and Gondor answers. Or,
yeah, Rohan answers, I guess.
I think so. That idea was spawned to me when I was in Spain and talking to a brother in Spain, and they were doing in Andalusia their St. John's Day on the beach, and they were having a massive bonfire. And I was like, dang,
there you
that
go.
That sounds rad.
So actually, you're not the only one who has thought of this. Ooh. So virtual brother Frank McKenna approached me at the school instruction, I think it was last weekend. And he's looking at doing that this summer.
Ooh, I do like Frank.
So keep your ears perked for that.
Oh, that sounds great. So teaser to the listeners, potentially we should, hopefully, fingers crossed, if you do see an event come out, you best come down for those bonfires being lit around the world, man.
I hope I didn't put Brother Frank in the hot seat now.
The hot seat can get results, though. You know what
there
I mean?
You go.
No, I think that's cool. And I just like these. I think like, so a lot of times our district relies on our district meeting to be the time to pull in all these lodges and do something. And the schools of education, but those are all, they're functional events. They serve a purpose.
Right.
They're serving instruction.
Yes.
Great. Or they're serving administrative. Great. Some districts I've been seeing around the state have been adding a fellowship aspect to their spring meetings. I saw one was doing a trivia contest and brewing contest right after. And I was like, that's a fun connect. For me, what I think the district would find a lot of joy from doing is a fellowship styled event saying we got our administrative ones covered. We got our education one covered. And then it's just waiting to be selected. Like, let's do one that's just like, hey, district, let's get together and be friends. And I think, you know, St. John's Day could be a cool version of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. June what now? He should know this by heart.
It is coming up. It's June. I think it's around middle. St. John's Day, June 24th. So end of June.
24th, yeah.
Yep. That's the close to the summer equinox.
Yep.
Yep. And I think that's, it's one of those things that sometimes when I'm trying to think, well, actually, it's not even that I'm trying to think of ideas. When I'm studying masonry, ideas come to me, and it's from tradition. So you'll see, like, traditionally lodges would do something like this, and you're like, oh, why can't we do that too? So it comes back around.
That's the beauty of reading and going through different various tomes, whatever. You might come up with an idea. It might not be your idea, but you don't know at the time. It just inspired you, and it might have been something you read 6 years ago.
I mean, masonry has hundreds of years of ideas. You know what I mean? People have been trying stuff for hundreds of years, so you'll find that a lot of times you're not even reinventing the wheel. You're just taking the wheel and putting it back down and be like, hey, you know, we used to do this for a long time. And you'll have, like, on the extreme side, like the TO, the traditional observant lodges, who are trying to pull in, like, lots of tradition. And, you know, I have no problem with that. But I've always said, like, select smaller things that bring back tradition and implement them at a time, because you'll find that they were around for a long time because people liked them. Mm-hmm. And so if you do a mass overhaul, it can almost be like too much to a culture to handle, because cultures are a little sensitive. But if you start implementing small things, you'll find that, I think, which is kind of strange, that with the younger generation, they want that traditionalism. And I think that you'll find that there is people hungry for it too. And I think St. John's Day is a great thing.
Yeah, that was something that was coming out of COVID. We're talking about, you know, the kids nowadays, they want to be involved in things their grandfathers did, you know, and I think there's a thirst to be part of Freemasonry right now. And obviously we're seeing that here at Lake Lodge. We're getting a lot of younger guys and they're...
And too much degree work.
Nothing,
never too much, never too
nothing
much.
Nothing wrong with degree work. My favorite part is the ritual. So, well, and the brotherhood. So,
yeah, I mean, when I was... conferring the EA the other day. Conferring's fun. Mm-hmm. Ritual is fun. People forget when, Cam's going through our thanking us, like, thank you so much for putting all this work in. I'm always like, you're welcome, but we like doing it. It is fun to do.
It is fun. You know, I've been able to now do ritual in the entire York Rite, and I've conferred several orders of the temple now, and that is a very, very...
detail-oriented. Yes,
a very spiritual connection with you and the candidate as the conferral, and same with Blue Lodge. You know, you are... together at that altar, and it's a very special thing.
So you bring up the York Rite, and I'm a member of two of those bodies, not taking my Templar yet. I'm slow rolling.
Nothing wrong with
that.
To
your guys' chagrin.
No, nothing wrong with that at all.
And I, sitting as an officer in the chapter, even though it's only on a degree basis because of my baby, but I really enjoyed the chapter and the council, and I'm looking forward to in the next couple of years getting going through the Order of the Temple. But so you have sat as, I guess, in the proverbial East, mm-hmm. in all three of the York Rite bodies, and you're currently sitting as the commander of Ivanhoe Commandery.
Yep.
For a couple more weeks.
Yeah, a couple more days.
Oh,
Wednesday.
What do you think has really drawn you to the York Rite and made you want to be so active?
So really a big part of it was a lot of the brothers that I worked with in the Blue Lodge belonged to the York Rite. Actually, York and Scotch, but within this very building, we had a number of York Rite bodies. So that introduction was pretty easy. And the continuation of your degrees within the Blue Lodge, when you start walking down the path of the York Rite, it's going to feel very similar. And so it's familiar. And that continuity of information, that I'm waiting for more information, I'm waiting for more light, that's coming through in the York Rite. So that's the draw. That's why you keep going. And then obviously, you know, finishing your Masonic education, the Hiramic legend is finished within the York Rite. So that's really special.
So one reason that I was so keen on getting my chapter degrees, I was reading the book Observing the Craft by Andrew Hammer. And so in this book, I would say lightly that Andrew was mad, and not me, Andrew, Andrew Hammer was mad that, in his opinion, appendant bodies were drawing too many people away from the Blue Lodge and people were focusing on them over their Blue Lodge. But every time he started expressing his anger about that, he'd go, with exception to the Royal Lodge, which is asterisked as potentially necessary. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that. I was like, that's unique that even though I heard that as an author throughout the years, he's thought out a little bit on that. And I think he has a point that you should put Blue Lodge first. He basically, his argument, just to not to put him on a bad glance, was appendant bodies are great, but not at the expense of the blue. And so you should be active in blue. And then if you want to explore other things, you should, but not at the expense of the blue. But yeah, he would always asterisk the Royal Arch degree. And I went, that's interesting. That even within his anger, he's like, but the Royal Arch is pretty important. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, talking to the guys at Lodge, they were like, yeah, this is in a lot of systems throughout the world. This is included in the Master Mason degree. It's the true finish. And I would even argue, having gone through council, that council is like, just like they squeezed a little extra lore into a small spot and said, this is actually cool to know too. And you're like, oh, that is cool to know. But the Royal Arch is awesome. And I do think, as a Master Mason, I think some people can be intimidated because they're like, well, I'm if I join that, I have to join all this stuff. You could do like Andrew did and just say, I'm joining the chapter and nothing else for right now. And yep, the unique thing with the York Rite is all three bodies are separate.
So that is correct.
Yeah. You don't have to, like the Scottish Rite, you're going through all the however many degrees, 32 optional 33rd degree. In the York Rite, you could just say, I just want to be a chapter mason. And so in my York Rite journey, the thing that I've been most interested in, besides that I love the degrees conferred, and having conferred, or not conferred, but having taken parts in the chapter degrees, I've had a great time with that. There are costumes, which is fun, is that one thing that I've really been interested in is, or what I've been trying to contribute, and hopefully once I get more time, we'll be able to be more active in chapter outside of just working degrees with you guys, is I want to see the individual bodies standing on their own two legs, because you York Rite boys are doing a lot of work right now.
Well, that is true. You know, there's a very active core, and in all three groups, and a lot of the guys are the same guys. But what's we're seeing right now is we're seeing a lot of younger guys coming in, and they're looking at the chapter, or they're looking at the commandery, you know, and they want to be have a participatory role in one of those groups, not necessarily both. You know, they got guys that are interested in all three. That's fine too. Council and chapter are so similar as far as their timelines, you know.
They're dealing the hieramic legend.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're a master mason, you receive the word, but it's not the true word, because that's been lost. You know, it's the substitute word. And in the Royal Arch, now you receive the true word. But the council, the cryptic degrees, how was that preserved, the craft? That's where those come from. So that's where the power of the council comes from.
I'll leave a teaser for the council. What is on his person that might someone be looking for? That's the question that you might be wondering. And that's something that council might shed some light on a certain person. So, and the thing is like, I think that, so it's interesting the way it's broken out, because for me, it looks to me like chapters, the core of the hieramic legend portion, council is an addition added to it to fill in some gaps. Whereas it feels like the chapter is like a more put together story, which it's very succinct. It follows a thing. It kind of leads up. It's square. It's like, it feels boxed in, like this is here. And then it feels like council, something that's slid within that box, going, this part of the story should be added. And I'm like, lovely. And then Templary is kind of its own thing that's at the end of it, which I've always found interesting. But for me, I was more interested in craft masonry than Templary, which is why I'm sitting into the craft mason extended stories, even though I've been told the Templar degrees are, for lack of better words, badass. So I do intend to take them eventually, but my focus in masonry has always been on supporting the craft. And for me, what I found in the Red Lodge is a similar experience to being in a Blue Lodge, but working important ritual for the craft.
Yep, you're definitely building that temple in the chapter. It's all the symbolism is about, you know, building that temple of yourself. And so it's a true continuation of Blue Lodge. Now, everyone here that's listening to your podcast, if they are a Mason, they're part of the York Rite. The Blue Lodge is the first step in York Rite. So chapter is actually your second step. So it's a little thing right there.
So you had just recently been going through your Scottish Rite journey as well.
Correct.
Having now had feet in both pendant lines, what do you think is the biggest difference between the two as far as like pros and cons? What do you have you enjoyed in both bodies, and what kind of contrasts them?
Well, to be fair, I haven't spent a lot of time within the Scottish Rite.
We understand you might be biased.
Might be biased. Actually, I spend a lot of time with my Blue Lodge, Lake Lodge, and Thursdays then are dedicated to pretty much everything Lake Lodge. And Thursday night at the Rite happens on Thursday night.
Oh, no.
So I haven't seen a lot of degrees past that, but I do enjoy the fellowship that was at the Scottish Rite. Great group of guys. A lot of history in that Rite. And the degrees are outstandingly done. And they're a little more theatrical. You know, obviously, a number of them are pre-taped, and they're, you know, real high quality theatrics. I mean, if you enjoy history and dramas, it's well done. So the York Rite side, I've been a lot more involved in the ritual. So as on that side, it's about the really being involved to learn more. So as you learn ritual, you're learning more too about what you went through that you might not remember just going through degree once. So that's a big difference for me, is the York Rite being more in tune with the Blue Lodge and the Scottish Rite being more in tune with the dramatics.
All right. I'm noticing we've gone over our time, but I do have one more question.
All right.
That we always ask to past masters.
Okay.
What would be your advice to give a new incoming worshipful master from your experience as a past master?
Well, my advice would be to the senior and junior wardens, actually.
That's me.
Yes, that would be you. Start planning. Get your year done in your head and on paper. And then all you have to do is execute. Okay. Because problems are going to happen. It's never going to be perfect. But if everyone knows what you want to see accomplished in a year before you start, you know, it makes it a lot easier to overcome obstacles, because now you have guys that understand the vision that can help you get past that obstacle. So begin with the end in mind. How's that sound?
Memento mori.
little Covey, Stephen Covey wisdom right there. So
I think it's interesting that you'll see so many successful past masters are like, plan. Like, what do you mean? It's like plan. Mm-hmm. I think it's good and sound advice. But yeah, so we will quickly now move on to news and events. All right, we're on to news and events. So what has been going on in Wisconsin? So one thing I wanted to bring to you guys' attention is the Project Adams AED program to save lives. Essentially, this program has been in place for about 30 years, so many of you guys are probably familiar with it. The Wisconsin Masonic Foundation Medical Fund is still supporting a matching grant for the placement of AEDs, which are automatic external defibrillators, in schools and public buildings. Since the unit cost has come down, they're doing a dollar-for-dollar match up to $800 per unit, and the total for the units are $1,600. Essentially, all the prerequisites to utilize this program is to just fill out your acts of kindness application, and the organization receiving the AED must be a school or government organization or a 501c3. So there's some information that goes along with that. And then the only other requirement is that a picture of the lodge check for half the cost of the AED. So this is a great program and a great opportunity to save some lives and help out your communities. So definitely something worth checking out. The other news story I had today was that Chautauqua Lodge has done a donation for the Children's Dyslexia Centers. So Chautauqua Lodge number 277 was able to give a check out for $675 donated forward to the Children's Dyslexia Foundation. And this is a great donation, and this foundation provides free tutoring for students with dyslexia and a variety of other services to the dyslexic. So it's really an awesome cause, and it's great that the brethren did that. All right, let's talk about some events. April, today, on the 18th, Lake Lodge is having their Soup and Chili Fest. And I will be in the kitchen working this event. So essentially, what it is we have the officers of Lake donating, and also a variety of members, I should say, donating soups and chilies. And essentially, you can buy a cup of soup for $3 and a flight of soup for $10. And that would be four different cups. Each cup comes with its own slice of bread. You can have it to here to for here or to go, and that'll be going from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Lake Masonic Center. So if you're looking for some soup or some chili, come on down. Also going on the 18th, Quincy Adams Lodge is doing their chop suey dinner. That's from 4 to 7 p.m. If you had bought tickets in advance, it looks like they were slightly cheaper, $11. Children are $5 who are under 12, and it's just going to be a buck more at the door. So if you're trying to go, you can still make it out there. That's going to be at Quincy Adams Masonic Center. On April 20th, Silas Shepherd, 1843, Lodge of Research, and James M. Hayes Lodge, 331, will be presenting a two-man performance entitled In Defense of the Ruffians. So a very cool education opportunity. I know that this is something you'll want to check out. So basically at 9 a.m., they're going to have coffee and carbs, gavels at 10, and away they go. On April 24th, the Valley of Madison Scottish Rite is doing their spring reunion, 4th, 14th, and 16th degrees. On the 26th, Three Pillars is actually doing a very cool fundraiser gala called the Three Pillars Music and Memories 2024 Gala. Essentially, this is an event that's going to be held at the Marriott in Milwaukee. It's going to be at 5 p.m. They're going to have a speaker, which is Matt LaPay, who is actually a sportscaster for the Badgers, so the name might seem familiar, who's going to be doing a talking bit about his journey with his mother's Alzheimer's and how he had to use his voice to support the mission to end this devastating disease. Basically, tickets are $85 an individual, $120 for two guests, $340 for four guests. $680 for a table of 8 and $850 for a table of 10. And they're going to have a bunch of other cool things at this event as well, including cocktail reception, sit-down dinner. There's going to be some auctions and some inspiring stories. And this fundraiser is an effort to transform our memory care initiatives and with the new residential memory care neighborhoods that are going into Three Pillars and community-based programs for those living with dementia. So if you're interested, please check that out. On April 27th, the Valley of Scottish Rite Spring Reunion continues with the 8th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 32nd degrees. Also, on April 27th, there's the CS Givings Foundation 17th Annual Game Dinner. Open to all sportsmen and women, $75 per person. They have live and silent auctions, lots of raffles, a meat buffet dinner, and open bar. Doors open at 4:30 p.m., and at 7 p.m., dinner's at 7:30 p.m., I should say. The proceeds from this event actually go to the Children's Dyslexia Centers, Wisconsin Hero Outdoors, Wisconsin Masonic Foundation Fire Suppression Tools, and various other children's charities. And this is going to be at the Okachi Lions Park Pavilion. Also on the 27th, busy day on the 27th of April, Lake Geneva Lodge is doing a discussion on the topic of preparation. So they have a speaker, which coming out to talk about various survival skills, such as in a preparation situation, food, water, shelter, security, and people, along with discussions on gear and strategy. This is going to be from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and it's going to be $20 per attendee. All are welcome to RSVP with Jason Zasada. Moving on to April 28th, Oregon Lodge number 152 is having a pancake breakfast. From 7 a.m. to noon, adults are $10, kids 6 through 10 are $5, under 6 are free. And that's going to be at Oregon Masonic Center. On the 29th, Ozaki Lodge is having their table lodge and fish boil. It's going to be starting at 5:30 p.m., open to 6 p.m., and it's $25 a person. Open to all Masons. Reservations must be in by April 25th with Worshipful Master Schroeder. Also on the 29th, we have our District 12 Spring Meeting and Awards Dinner. This is going to be held this year at Nico's Authentic Premium Pizza. And you can find more information about that on our lodge to RSVP. And it's, I think there's a cover at the door, but more information on our lodge, and that's the way you'd RSVP as well. So remember, if you're a principal officer in District 12, you're required to go to this meeting. Otherwise, it's open to all our brethren. On April 30th, we have a symposium by the Education Committee. It's going to be at 7 p.m., and they'll be sending you more information to your email. It's basically an education panel, and the topic is going to be on the Morgan Affair. Big hot-button topic and definitely worth checking out. I went to their last symposium, and it was awesome. Highly recommend it. Moving on to May, we'll just do a couple in May, and then we'll save some for you guys. In May, on May 3rd, we have Wisconsin 13's Trivia Night. $10 per person, includes refreshments for teams of four. This will be at the Brookfield Masonic Center. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the game starts at 6:30 p.m. And there will be prizes for first, second, and best team names. So start thinking about your team names now. And for more info, please reach out to Dan Pappas. Also coming up in May, on May 11th, James Hayes Lodge is having their Shed Lodge. It's going to start at 1 p.m. and it's going to be in Brown Deer. More information is on the Our Lodge page, which is also where you'll RSVP, and it's going to be $30 per person. I know they're doing some good barbecue, so definitely worth checking it out. And last but not least, on May 16th, Wacoma Lodge number 90 is having their annual oyster stew and chili dinner. It's going to be from 5 to 8 p.m. and donations are of $10. So that is what's going on around Wisconsin. Cool. Well, it was awesome having John on the podcast, and thanks for tuning in. And until next time, take care.